Okay, we're reconvening now with agenda item 6, Committee for Family Forest Lands, Forest Dwelling Allowance. Kyle, hi.
Hi. Good afternoon, Chair Emerson, board members, State Forester Doherty. For the record, my name is Kyle Abraham, and I serve as the Deputy Chief of the Private Forest Division. Thank you for the time on the agenda today. It's my pleasure to introduce here today in front of you the Chair for the Committee for Family Forest Lands, Evan Barnes, the Northwest Landowner Representative, Bonnie Shoemaker, also a voting member on the committee, Jim James, Executive Director for OSWA, and Mariel Darzin, Staff Attorney for Thousand Friends. This group has worked over the last 6 months to a year on a concept of succession planning, particularly for dwelling allowances on forest land, and have some information to share with you today. You'll notice that we did change the staff report so that it does not have a recommendation in front of the board at this time. With that, I'll turn it over to Chair Barnes.
Good afternoon. I am the chair. I didn't run for the position, but I was volunteered for it, and I accepted it willingly.
I know the feeling.
Yeah. So we've got a whole pile of things here, but I think we want to go through it as briefly as possible to keep the meeting moving. It's something that came up to us. Succession planning is a major factor for family forest lands. And Jim, correct me or kick me under the table if I quote figures wrong, but about 70,000 ownerships in the state of Oregon. And we'd like to try to tease out those acreages exactly, but they run from about 10 acres up to about 5,000. And with the predominant size being somewhere in the couple hundred acre size, for us, my wife and I own 80 acres of timberland in Douglas County. And one of the major problems is who is going to take over this land when we go? And I'm not planning on going anywhere for 50 years, but if unfortunately some of my kids take me away, somebody will have to take over this property. And invariably, the properties are subject to then, because we're in the wildland urban interface, a subdivision, land partition. That's the pressure that happens. So we'd like to see that squelched and a way for succession to happen. And the idea is being that if family members or relatives within the scope of how we make the rules when this does or does not go through, people could assume the ownership and under the guidance of the previous owners, learn about timber, tree farming, and most importantly, I think on the agenda is fire protection and then eventual suppression, if need be. If we don't bring fire into the conversation, we'll be missing the biggest thing that hurts us, because when all these big fires that have been roaring through us happen, we won't have anything to talk about because there won't be any trees. And I don't know where the march stops, and I know there's efforts to work on that, but that's certainly a factor. But I'll turn it over to Bonnie from here. And I am the Southern Oregon Land Representative on the committee.
Good morning, board members, Chair Emerson, and State Forester Peter Doherty. I was here last July representing the Committee for Family Forest Lands, and I'm happy to be here again, meet the three new Board of Forestry members, and update all of you on the issue of family forest land continuity. My name is Bonnie Shoemaker, and I am the Northwest Landowner Representative on the Committee for Family Forest Lands. My husband and I own and care for 160 acres in Washington County. We are active members of Oregon Small Woodlands Association and its county chapter, Washington County Small Woodlands Association, of which I am president. Our tree farm is certified under the American Tree Farm System. We are particularly pleased that in 2017, we were able to expand our tree farm to its original 160-acre homestead, and we are currently working on writing a history of the property since it was homesteaded in 1886. Most of our trees are young, under 20 years. Their maturity will happen beyond our lifetime, and we would love for this little piece of heaven to remain in our family for many generations. Today, I thank the Board of Forestry for the opportunity to update you on the Committee for Family Forest Lands focus area in regards to maintaining family forest land continuity. Oregon's land use laws were written in 1973 to provide needed statewide protection for farm and forest land. Goal 4 of the land use laws covers forest land. The goal begins, quote, to conserve forest lands by maintaining the forest land base and to protect the state's forest economy, unquote. This protection of forest land has been successful. 98% of Oregon's forests have been retained since 1974, certainly something to applaud. These forest lands provide clean air, water, habitat, jobs, and help fight climate change. This success has been accomplished by restricting development, but new issues have arisen for both forest and farm lands and aging ownership. According to the OFRI publication, Oregon Forest Facts 2019-2020, family forest land owners own and care for 3.6 million acres of Oregon's forest land, about 35% of Oregon's privately owned forests. The 2004 Family Forest Land Survey done for OFRI by CFM Research states that half the owners are 65 or older. 4 of every 10 are women. Many have owned their land for over 25 years. In both farm and forest, the upcoming issue of intergenerational transfer is huge. The Committee for Family Forest Lands sees a need to provide an incentive to help make this transfer successful. Land that is zoned for agricultural use has a tool to deal with this. A second dwelling is allowed for a family member on the same lot or parcel as the owner. Goal 3 of Oregon's land use laws covers agricultural land and has allowed this from the beginning, quote, if the farm operator does or will require the assistance of the relative in the management of the farm, unquote. The thought was that farmers might need daily help on the land. Since this option for a second dwelling was already in place, it was easy to apply it to the emerging intergenerational issue. Goal 4 for forest land excluded the second dwelling from the very beginning. Perhaps we did not make a big enough argument about the importance of management of forest land. The Committee for Family Forest Land feels that giving forest land owners the option to have extended families live together on their land would help create a seamless intergenerational transfer. We recognize that small woodland parcels tend to be near the wildland-urban interface, making them vulnerable for development, but also accessible for a family member to pursue a career while living on the land and learning forest management. As they age, forest land owners find they cannot do the work they used to do. The next generation can help fill in the slack and be prepared for the orderly transfer of land and management. Growing and managing forest land takes generations. Trees grow slowly. Ties to the land attempts to address the intergenerational transfer issue, but not having the option of living on the land is an obstacle. The second dwelling option would be another tool. The Committee for Family Forest Land realizes that ODF and the Board of Forestry have been strong proponents of land use laws and their success. We also realize that allowing a second dwelling for a family member is an issue that needs to be addressed by the Oregon legislature. Currently, House Bill 2469 addresses this issue in the 2019 legislative session. The second dwelling for a relative would be on the same lot or parcel and no more than 200 feet from the existing primary dwelling. There is no land division. The second dwelling must pass fire safe regulations. And only forest land that already qualifies for a dwelling would be eligible. We appreciate the opportunity to inform the Board of Forestry of this incentive for maintaining family forest land continuity. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yep. Yep. Chair Imanson, State Forest Authority, and the Board of Forestry. My name is Jim James. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Small Woodlands Association. And because of the great work that the Committee for Family Forest Land has done, OSWA has sponsored a bill in this legislative session, House Bill 2469. A copy of the bill is, it's a one-page bill. It's relatively simple. And again, the purpose is to allow a second dwelling on a property, providing there is a relative that would like to live on the property. And the primary goal is succession planning. And it's clear that when without some type of a succession planning process, when the original owners of the property are no longer capable of managing the property, or if they pass, and the property sold, it's unlikely that the management of that property will continue to be the same as the previous owner, and conversion to another use is very common. The bill is relatively simple. First of all, to comply for the second dwelling, you have to be a relative, and we use the same definition of a relative in the agricultural law that requires the same on agricultural land. Bonnie mentioned it has to be within 200 feet of the existing dwelling. The goal there is to be on the same footprint. One concern of dwellings on property are during a wildfire. And so the intent is that in a wildfire situation, the complications of a home being there would be minimized because it's right there on the same footprint. The second dwelling would continue to be in the ownership of the property. The property would not be changed to where a second dwelling would be on a separate piece of property. One issue has come up is what happens to the second dwelling once things change. And the dwelling would not be removed, and it would be conceivable that the owner could rent that facility to a non-relative. That's not the intent of the bill, but once it's built, it would be inconceivable to have that building removed. In all likelihood, another relative could occupy that. And so that is one I brought it up because that's an issue that has come up multiple times about this bill. And again, the goal is to help in the management of the property, help facilitate succession planning, and we believe prevent the conversion of forest land to other uses, and there are lots of ways for that to happen. Thank you.
Real.
Thank you, Chair Anderson. Am I good? Chair Imanson, members of the board, for the record, Marielle Darzin, staff attorney for 1000 Friends of Oregon. We're a statewide land use organization. We've been in existence since 1974. Thank you very much for the invitation to be here today. I really appreciate it. Our organization really appreciates the work that Department of Forestry and the board is doing to protect our forest lands pursuant to Goal 4. So we're happy to be here and participate with you. I apologize. I've had a whirlwind couple of days. I was saying earlier today, I have visited the judicial branch, the legislative branch, and now the executive branch in the last 48 hours. So if I start arguing like an attorney, I apologize. That was yesterday. I am happy to be here, and I was able to visit with the CFF on this issue about a month or so ago, and I really appreciated hearing from them on this issue, and was able to bring this back to our leadership and talk about the concept and the issue of succession planning. And we're definitely very sensitive to that issue because we understand the importance of keeping forest land in contiguous large blocks, which is part of Goal 4, and also in the hands of folks that are interested in doing forest management into the future. So we definitely appreciate that. I think that we are really, both for farmland and forest land, interested in looking at sort of the whole picture of succession planning and what that looks like, and a variety of tools that we think could be useful to address that, whether it's long-term conservation easements or permanent conservation easements or forest management plans or land use changes. So we're definitely happy to talk about that. One of the things that's a little challenging about land use law is going back and changing what's already there for the future. We're limited to some degree by Measure 49 and some of those concerns, but also just land use is kind of technical, and the scheme that's in place was put there for a reason, and unwinding that is challenging. So just to the extent that we've been reviewing this bill, when I first heard about it, I think it's a great idea because I love the fact that it's tied to a minimum lot size that's large. And I like that it's consistent with what happens on farmland. I think that's great. I think what our concern is that there's already an existing dwelling entitlement on forest land that we've had a hard time with, and that's the forest template dwelling. And we've been working to try to that's a dwelling entitlement that's not tied to active forest use. And so that's been problematic for us because we've seen a lot of small scale rural subdivisions crop up because of the complicated nature of that entitlement. So in an ideal world, we would get rid of that one and put this one in. That is much easier said than done, as I have learned over the last couple weeks at the legislature. So I think at this point we would love to continue to explore the concept, and I think something that would be helpful for us just learning about this is kind of to hear more about how this works in practice with succession on forest land. I'm really familiar with succession planning in farmland, but I haven't seen it as much with how it works in a family who's doing active timber management and how that might look on the ground on a day-to-day. And I think for some of our folks, just thinking about what the sort of daily life of somebody who's involved in active timber management and how you bring the next generation into that, I think is something that would be great for the sort of land use community to hear about more. So we look forward to working more on this in the future, and we thank you for the opportunity to be here today.
Thank you. Well, I guess in closing, the very able or our able facilitator, Kyle, was brought this idea up a few months ago as we started fleshing out 2469 and said, well, maybe we should have somebody from Thousand Friends in to see what they think. And I thought it was a great idea. And as you might expect, maybe some of our interest runs counter, but I believe there's something in the middle that we can both settle on. And I think you've probably seen that they've come out with a report on wildland fire. I don't mean to harp on this, but I think it's the biggest issue we have going right now. It's great to have Murrell help us with this and to see how we can collaborate on this. And we know there's the template drawing issue on parcels and on ADUs. So if there's any other questions, we're all here to answer. We'll stay here as late as you need to and to help out on anything you need. And to know that we are your research arm and get out reports and white papers on any subjects dealing with forest land, family forest lands.
Thank you. Jim?
Yeah. I would first just want to salute you on what you're trying to do. It's great. I have a few questions, and I think your bill probably needs some work. Specific concerns that I would have, one was what Jim mentioned about I'm worried, I guess, I'm being the cynic here, but I'm worried about the people who would try to use this for purposes other than just succession planning, whether they would really just be trying to create a rental property for income and or make the property more valuable in preparation for a sale. And since you've heard that criticism, I'm curious as to why it seems like it would be relatively easy. I know on the renting, even if there was a 5-year limitation or something like that, that would slow down those people who would have the less than honorable intentions here of making this actually work for the people who need it for succession. The other thing that just occurs to me is, and I don't know, you guys could tell me, on the west side of Oregon, how many acres of good productive forest land does it take for a family or two families to make a living from? And so I would be more interested to see this have a limitation of whatever number of acres that is considered to be a reasonable number of acres, and in properties that are smaller than that, where it's really ridiculous to think that a family could actually be making a living from it, would not be included here. Because what you're really trying to do is make succession more viable for people who are, just like with farmers, you know, who are making their living in agriculture. Am I right? So those are just some thoughts. I think, you know, you should proceed here, but I think you're going to have to deal with a few issues like this if you're going to get it through the legislature.
No, and you're absolutely right. We have tossed around the acreage, and obviously we're a part, would want to be a part of the rulemaking process once this was passed into law. There's a lot of things to flesh out, and the acreage was one of the biggest ones, and we were leaning towards a higher acreage so mm-hmm. that it would not be, you know, 5-10 acre parcels.
Right.
Because that clearly, and I know from 44 years of experience in the woods, you know, once you get 2 or 3 houses on smaller parcels, there's no more timber cutting.
Right.
By the time you add the utilities and the driveways and the barn, the chicken coop and the heifer hut, you've got it covered, and nobody wants to cut any trees. Yeah. Clearly. And then the other thing that we've had many ideas that have come up, we wanted to move it forward to this body, but ideas of a management plan, a timber management plan that would also have some covenants in it for the use of this building. So that somebody was going, okay, looks like I can, you know, I've got some real estate potential here and I'll do this. Oh, wait a minute, there's a 15-year limit on this, or 10 years, or, you know, what we, you know, come up with as a rule. So there's a lot of different things we'd like to make be factors to not just the, yes, you can put a second dwelling in, but wait a minute, you have to meet these. Fire safe construction and defensible space would be imperative. Back to fire, you know, the Paradise Fire, there was an article in the Washington Post about a couple who had just completed their house, late in October, and the fire was November 8th, and the fire went around their house, and they complied with every different standard for fire safe construction. So I though that's imperative, and water supply access, all of those things that help us. So yes, absolutely. I agree with you.
It's never easy, right?
Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate it. And that we'll take that to heart.
Jim, I'd like to comment on the number of acres to be able to make a living off your forest land is much larger than most family woodland owners own. In fact, very few family woodland owners rely on their forest for their livelihood. But there's a fair amount of work required to managing a forest, controlling invasive species, doing thinning, keeping the forest healthy, doing a salvage. So there's a lot of manpower required to manage a 40-acre parcel, for example. And probably the average age of, I mean, most OSWA members is beyond the retirement age.
Right.
And so oftentimes those folks need some assistance just for the management of their forest.
Jim, I think that's a valid point. And, you know, so probably something needs to be created that recognizes both that reality and the reality that you don't want a whole bunch of more homes on 10-acre parcels. Yeah, point taken.
Okay.
Brenda has a question.
Yeah, a question. And at my age, I should probably be thinking about this more than I have been, so thank you for this. So if a parcel is zoned forest land now and the owner dies, is there a risk of having it be rezoned into something else? Or is it going to stay forest land but by some other owner after the estate is settled?
I would pass that one to Marielle. I think she could probably, from the legal point, give a better answer.
Yeah, most likely it will stay in forest land. It's a pretty, it is a fairly difficult process to get your land rezoned to something other than forest. So most likely, unless the county is taking an active interest in changing that area, it probably will stay forest on a smaller lot, something like less than 10. Somebody might be able to come in and say, I just can't. I can't make this work. It's not productive and I want to switch it to residential. They might be able to do that, but it's a pretty challenging process.
So I appreciate the succession planning piece and keeping it in the family, but the risk of having it go to some other land use, though, seems less. Yeah, is that correct?
One of the primary land use changes is to agriculture. A lot of lands have been converted to vineyards that were forest land.
Mm-hmm.
And the conversion of forest to agriculture is a relatively simple process. You just say, I want to do it, and you do so.
Okay.
So that's the major challenge.
But the person, the niece, nephew, son, daughter who lives in that second home could also make that decision, could they not?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
However, the likelihood, once they've lived on the property, and have a passion for it, the likelihood of that, we believe, is relatively low. But absolutely. Every landowner has that option anytime they want it.
Thank you.
I think another thing to consider, the heirs could sell the land to somebody else who bought it as forest land, but they might not know anything about managing forest land. Just an anecdotal thing. We had a friend who bought a piece of forest land out in Oregon, but couldn't move out for a couple of years. And when he finally got here, he said, "I didn't realize what a mess you could make of your forest in a couple of years with nobody taking care of it." So the continual care, I think, is something that you'd have a higher probability of happening if it was a...
I appreciate that, and that's kind of a long philosophical discussion that we don't have time for now, but some people choose not to manage their forest, and that's their choice. So, I mean, it's everybody has those choices. So, thank you.
Well, I think it's great that Thousand Friends is working with Committee for Family Forest Lands and ASWA to try to address this issue. And I think just encourage you to keep that going and see what you can come up with that would be able to move forward. So,
could I just add a comment that initially, before we reached out to 1,000 Friends, there was this perception that we would be at odds with one another.
Right.
But I have to compliment Mariel and the openness to try to find a solution that works for everyone. So, appreciate their willingness to do that. Thank you.
Yeah, and I'm very supportive and very pleased. This has gotten further than we've ever seen this concept being developed in Committee Family Forest. I think you've heard some good suggestions here. I think there was an attempt to limit it to greater than 80 acres, but there may be under 780, right, is 80 acres. But there's lots of exceptions under that as well, which it gets to the point of how challenging this can be when you're trying to do something within the land use laws. So I would really encourage you to continue to, find a solution. And I encourage you encourage the CFF the last time to come back to the board if you developed a legislative concept. And I would encourage now CFF and 1,000 Friends, if you can come up with a joint solution, I think there's a really good chance at the board, because we believe in keeping forest land in forest and support of family forest land. At the same time, we've been very strong proponents of land use law. So thank you.
I need to repeat what I said earlier today, that pursuant to ORS 192-6602H, the board will now meet in closed executive session. The purpose of the session will be to confer with legal counsel regarding the board's rights and duties related to current litigation or litigation likely to be filed. Representatives of the news media and designated staff shall be allowed to attend the executive session. All other members of the public are not allowed to join, and we will adjourn the full board meeting directly after the executive session is done. So, as I said before, we won't be coming back into this room, and we appreciate the participation of all those who came today. And
yes, we'll be meeting in the Clatsop room.
Okay.
And so 5 minutes, we'll get started.
Sure.